with the risk involved of COVID-19 for pregnant women. Are pregnant women at a higher risk?
Sure. So generally, you know, we understand these are unprecedented times, and our pregnant patients are scared. Like you said, they hear these rumors, they're worried about how the pandemic will affect, you know, their pregnancy and then their delivery experience. You know, Mon Health, again, you know, safety is our top priority. You know, we are committed to keeping our patients informed by doing these radio shows, putting on things on social media, just to kind of keep our patients informed. Again, a lot of things, just like in life, when there's a lack of communication, you know, things get rumored and then you get nervous about things. So we just really encourage our patients to talk with their physicians at their appointment. Call in if you're at home and you hear a rumor and you have questions, because, you know, we do see patients coming into our office and they are absolutely nervous and worried about this. And we talk with them at length. And I really feel like the large majority of patients, once we talk with them, they understand what we're doing and how their delivery will go. I think they feel a big sense of relief and a lot of those rumors you know, are put to rest. So I think just communication and talking to doctors, I think, are essential.
Well,
now, to answer your question, go ahead.
Well, just to add to that, it's a time where you tend to have a lot of, well, you're not sleeping as well. You've got a little more anxiety, perhaps, anyways. Your hormones are kind of all over the place. So it's okay to have these questions and feelings.
Yes.
Just talk to the right people about it. Don't go on there and get opinions from Facebook.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the same, coronavirus or not. You know, you come to your doctor's office, I mean, mostly to get educated and to talk to them about your concerns. And the same thing applies with coronavirus. To directly answer your question, pregnant women, coronavirus, is there an increased risk to worry about? We know that pregnant women, we've always known, pregnant women are relatively immunocompromised. So they are more likely to get the common cold if they're exposed to it, to get influenza if they're exposed to it, which is why every year during flu season, we highly recommend all pregnant patients to get their flu shots. The same initial concern was there for coronavirus, that if you're immunocompromised, can you get coronavirus easier? And if so, can you get sicker from that? And while in theory that should be the case, we haven't seen, and again, this is a new pandemic for us, so we don't have years of data and case reports to look at, but we haven't seen increases in pregnant women getting sick and getting sicker. And I think that's very reassuring for us. And I think the same can be said for babies and young kids as well. So our guard is up, as it always should be when you're pregnant. But we, luckily, we haven't seen big increased risks with that. And I know with our patients, we have not had any of our patients sick, either presenting at the hospital or in our office sick. So we're lucky so far.
And so what is Mon Health System doing to keep the patient safe? And again, you know, I mentioned that you hear rumors that no partners are allowed in, no visitors. What is the actual policy right now?
Sure. Let's break this up into two categories. Let's talk about our office and clinic appointments first, and then we'll talk about in the birth center and the hospital.
Okay.
So as far as our clinic, all patients are receiving phone calls. As one could guess, we're not, you know, going standard business right now, and things change on a daily basis. And kind of our typical routine has changed a lot. So patients are, and we apologize about this, getting more phone calls than normal about shuffling appointments around and rescheduling them. But you'll get a phone call before your appointment screening to ask if you have any symptoms, fever, shortness of breath, cough or chills, if you've had a travel history, if you work in a nursing home or have visited in a nursing home, any of those questions. And if so, then we obviously kind of put a halt on things and either direct you if you need tested or figure out when it needs to be done. So initially, people were screened with phone calls. So hopefully people come into their office, we already have those questions answered, and they're healthier when they come to the office. Then when they get to the office, when they're in the lobby of the office, before they even make it into our OBGYN lobby, when they're in the main lobby of the building, there's a table out there where everybody is screened, and they're again asked the same questions to realize if it's safe for them to go into our OBGYN office. In addition to that, we have asked for no visitors to come into the office because we want patients to be able to come here and see their doctor without worrying about other people in the waiting room or other, you know, kids and or visitors that potentially could expose them. So we've asked for no visitors. In addition, we have tried to eliminate or at least curtail doctor's appointments that aren't as essential as normal. So we've designated a handful of our pregnant visits as essential visits. And those generally include your very first visit when you're here, where you have an ultrasound and we discuss your history and do lab work. When you're 20 weeks and we do your anatomy ultrasound, we, of course, think that's a relatively essential visit. When you're 28 weeks and we do your diabetes testing and or get a Rogam shot or other vaccinations, the whooping cough shot, we generally see people there. And then when patients are 36 weeks and beyond and we're seeing them on a weekly basis, we generally see them. Now, there's usually a lot of other office appointments that in between those that we're seeing are non-essential. And we are either, and this is kind of a case-by-case basis, depending what the patient wants, their comfort level with things, their pregnancy and their risk factors, we're either just rescheduling them instead of seeing them in 2 weeks like we normally would, maybe we push it out to 4 weeks. Maybe in 2 weeks we do want to touch base with them, so we just talk on the phone with them about, you know, current changes in their pregnancy or their health, or obviously all the COVID-19 stuff. Or Mon General has done a really good job at putting telemedicine together. So we are starting to do telemedicine where, as opposed to just a phone call, you're looking more or less FaceTime, face-to-face on your computer or your phone, having a face-to-face visit with your doctor. So that's what we're doing in the clinic. Any questions about that?
No, that makes perfect sense. Let's pause there, fit in our first break, and then when we come back, we'll discuss what's happening actually for delivered
mothers.
Yes, and so now let's talk a little bit about what visitation restrictions look like whenever we are looking at actual labor and delivery.
Sure. So I think it was a week or two ago. I remember, you know, watching the nightly news, and they talked about, you know, New York City, the hot spot, or one of the hot spots in the United States, about how spouses were being banned from the labor and delivery units in the hospitals. And while, you know, it obviously caught my attention because we are not doing that, and I started to read some more about it. And in those areas where there are so many cases of patients and staff and others, they have made the very hard decision to do that. We do not do that in Morgantown. WVU does not do that either. We still allow a visitor in the hospital. Now, what we have changed is it's one support person. So one spouse or whoever you designate your support person is, they can come in with you, and they're there in the labor and delivery room the entire time that you're there. If you end up having to have a C-section or have a scheduled C-section, they still go to the operating room with you as always. So it's just one support person as opposed to, you know, 3, 4, 5 people like previously was allowed.
And once the baby is born, people are going to have to wait to meet them, or they're going to have to meet them virtually. You're not just letting everybody come in post-birth either.
Correct. Yes, that is very true. So we really encourage using whether it's FaceTime or what have you to, you know, patch in your family members if they want to see you and the baby, you know, for the first day or two. And then once you go home, of course, that's when you can either continue your FaceTime to continue to try to isolate your family like we all should be doing, versus having other healthy family members come over to the house to see you and the baby.
We've only got a couple minutes left in this segment before our next break, but I do want to hit for just a moment because, again, in the world of sort of rumors and things going on out there, I'm hearing a lot more about people considering home births. What are your thoughts on this?
Sure. So the coronavirus has not changed anything. We still view safety as our first priority. Mon Health and the American College of OBGYN have always said hospitals are the safest place to have your baby, and that still stands. We know that home births are associated with 2-fold increase in perinatal death, 3-fold increase in seizures. A first-time mother is attempting a home birth, up to 37% of them require being transported to the hospital for more urgent deliveries. And when you're transferred, that obviously is a delay in care and time that's very detrimental to the baby's health and your health. In addition, Mon Health does not collaborate with any home birth providers. So if somebody is attempting a home birth and things are not going well and they show up to Mon General, we have not met. We don't have the records. We're really kind of being caught off guard, and it's very hard to care for patients in those circumstances. For all those reasons, the American College of OBGYN has always recommended hospitals as the safest place to have your baby, and that has not changed under this current pandemic.
every birth is different and you never know what to expect. That's if I've learned anything from my births, that's the thing to know. All right, so my final question for you, and we have to make this very quick. My final question for you is, you know, talking about resources postpartum, I think especially now in a time when people are especially anxious and fearful and they're having a lot of these mental health issues anyways, adding to that postpartum, what can you do to support women?
Absolutely. So again, communication with family members, communication with our office. We've hired a nurse navigator who's one of our longtime labor and delivery nurses to really help us coordinate community resources and to be the point person for all of our patients that we feel are at increased risk for postpartum mood disorders. She calls all patients, whether they have mood disorders or not, a week after delivery, and then really keeps in touch with patients that need increased care, whether it's, again, telemedicine visits, coming to the office, facilitating appointments to a psychiatrist or to a therapist. Again, it's just that communication. We have the links, we have the communication, we just have to use them.
All right, let's take our next break, Dave, and then when we come back, Dr. V, it's going to be your show.
This is Mon Health Talk, providing a window into the Mon Health system and the dedicated healthcare providers who work there. If you'd like to comment or ask a question, please call 304-296-0041.
Listening to Mon Health Talk, joining us Dr. Arjun Vasudevan and Dr. Shane Prettyman. We've been talking about how this could impact expectant mothers. But Dr. V, overall, how is West Virginia doing now several weeks after our first case was officially confirmed in West Virginia? How are we doing as far as the social distancing and compared to the rest of the country?
So as far as the rest of the country, the numbers are still going up. Some bigger states mentioned they had a small dip on the weekend, especially on Sunday. As far as West Virginia, our numbers have been going up this week, especially in comparison to just last week. On Saturday, we saw 45 new cases. On Sunday, we saw 42 new cases. And on Friday, this was just 20 new cases. So our cases are definitely going up. And with the weather warming up, I'm hearing news reports of people crowding in grocery stores and public places. So it's really important to continue practicing social distancing. Don't lax on that. Please continue to take all the precautions that we've been taking in the previous weeks, and it's really important to continue to do so. And in the light of this, the justice, our governor justice has extended the precautions for another week, and they are going to convene today for a meeting and talk about further restrictions today.
You know, I want to make an observation and have you clarify for folks. An observation I have is that, and this is anecdotal, but I feel like people believe that as long as you're gathering outdoors, it's okay to not fully follow social distancing. In particular, if you're having a barbecue or you're playing outdoor activities or something like that, and you're kind of keeping that 6 feet distance, but you can gather in a large group if you're doing that. Is that true?
That is absolutely not true, and thank you for bringing that up. It is important, even if we are outside, to practice the same rules. 6 feet apart, if possible, do not congregate. With barbecues and games, you're still likely, very likely, to touch same things as someone else. And we are having more and more data that people can be asymptomatic, not have any symptoms, and still be able to pass this infection. For all you know, you could touch something as innocent as a football, and then touch your face, scratch your nose, and get the infection. So practice the same precautions you've been practicing so far. Just because the weather is warmer right now does not change the rules. Until we have more information, until we see a drop in numbers, continue to stay safe and possibly stay home.
And do we have enough data yet? Does warmer weather help kill this virus? You know, we see that a lot with flu and things where we have a dip in the summertime, but then we have to pick back up in October. Is that we're not seeing that yet, right? Or do we even know?
No, we have not yet seen any dip in our numbers, especially despite the warmer weathers right now. From the projections that we have as far as the numbers, they are bound to continue to go up for a few more weeks before they start to dip. As far as flu, you are correct. Seasonality is very important with flu, but we also have very good flu vaccinations for flu, and that has not been the case yet with coronavirus. Hopefully, once that comes, things switch to a relatively new normal.
Let's talk for a moment now about masks. Originally, we were not told that we needed to wear masks all the time in public, but now they're saying that we should wear masks. So what, just wear them? I mean, is there anything we need to know about that?
So originally, I feel like a lot of the recommendations came to make sure that with the hoarding, people do not panic, purchase masks in large quantities, and the healthcare workers have to do with significant reduction or lack of accessibility to face masks. The original recommendations were if you don't have symptoms, don't wear a face mask. But this is an evolving process. We are getting more and more new data. So over the weekend, CDC mentioned that from what data they have, people even who don't have any symptoms, people who don't show any outward symptoms of the infection can still continue to transmit infection. And that's why they recommended wearing face masks, especially in areas where there is significant community-based transmission. And that seems to be in most of the states in USA right now.
In about 10 seconds, can you tell me, will anything do, or does it need to be a mask with a filter?
Any mask is better than no mask at all at this point. Masks with filter are better. Make sure that you do not touch your face mask and then touch your face. If you touch your face mask, make sure you wash your hands. Try to wash your face mask every day after use. And follow the same precautions despite wearing a face mask. The same 6 feet rule applies despite a face mask. Those who can't take it off when they are having difficulty breathing or if they don't have their faculties, do not place a face mask on them, not for kids under 2 years of age.
Dr. V and Dr. Prettyman, appreciate the information this morning. Stay well and stay safe. Thank you very much.